So one of the greatest documents ever written by the hand of man is the U.S. Constitution. Next to the Bible, nothing else has ever been put in writing that had such a profound impact on the ability of people to actually live free. And once the original document was put in place, I will tell you this, the Founding Fathers, they came back a few years later, and as many of you already know, they determined to include a few clarifications. Yeah, they amended the original document, but they made it very, very specific by doing so. The members of the House and Senate, they voted and they passed what have now become known as the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments. And originally, there were 12, interesting, that were sent out to the states to be ratified. By 1791, though, the states had chosen to only ratify 10 of them, and they became enshrined in our Bill of Rights, the law of the land. But it didn't happen without some fuss, mind you. I mean, apparently debate got pretty heated. But in the end, 10 were adopted, duly passed, and enshrined as actual rights. And I want to stress that key word right there. These are rights. They are not permissions. They're not opportunities. They're not allowances. It's about rights. It's the difference between the words may and shall. I mean, if I were to tell you that you may have a right to bear arms or you may have a right to free speech, well, that would not mean near as much as the fact that we can say things now like your right to bear arms shall not be infringed, or that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or abridging the freedom of speech. Rights are actual imperatives. They are deemed somewhat absolute in nature as according to the law. They are defensible. They are designed to be barriers against tyranny and crime. Well, most folks out there right now would be more familiar with the First, the Second, the Fourth Amendments, things like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to assemble, the right to bear arms, the right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. But let me skip ahead and delve a bit into the Tenth Amendment. Remember that when Congress voted to approve the amendments to our Constitution, the ones that we call the Bill of Rights, they had to send it out to the states. Now think about that. Congress acted, but apparently what happened in the nation's capital did not mean everything was finished. They had to go to the various states who also wound up having a say in the matter. So here's the actual verbiage. You ready? The 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution states, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited it by the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So why was that important? Why did the founders spend so much time seceding from Great Britain, fighting a revolutionary war, absolving themselves of an oppressive monarchical form of government, only to pass an amendment that seems to then limit their newly found governmental powers? By giving away part of that authority to other bodies of governance at the state level, I mean, does it make sense? They fought for the right for self-determination, but then they spread out the power. Why? Well, it's a worthy question. And it comes down to the fact that we are a republic. We are a republic founded upon the concept of federalism. Two words that are key to all of it, republic and federalism. A republic, meaning that we are a public form of government, one in which the people have their say through elected representation. Federalism, meaning that it's designed not to be one central form of government which holds all the power and authority, but that governing power must in fact be shared among all the states. So when the colonies declared their independence from the crown, they really declared their desire to live freely, to be able to have a say in their day-to-day affairs, and they had none of that of freedom in the days prior to the Revolution. They all lived and worked back then and had the privilege of doing so at the very discretion of the crown. The crown of England back then represented a centralized government. No fetters, no restraints. Could do whatever it wanted to and you just had to deal with it. That's the base ingredient, by the way, for tyranny. And the Founding Fathers knew it. They knew it well. So when the original founders of this nation built the framework for government, they first established three branches, the legislative, the executive, the judicial. It was all designed for checks and balances. The ability of one branch of government to have some authorities that others didn't have, because they knew that without those checks and balances among the three, that ultimate power might wind up just like vesting itself so deeply in one single branch of government that they would be right back to where they started from. But they also saw a need to make sure that one detached form of federal government sitting far away in the nation's capital, that it could not just decree from afar that which did not make any sense for where we sit in the outlying states. When all power and decision-making authority is vested in just one office, and even potentially in just one person, the temptation to do all that comes to that person's mind could prove to be alarmingly bad. And the consequences can be horrific. So here's an extreme example that I saw firsthand. When I got to Baghdad in early 2004, the war was still pretty fresh. As we helped the Iraqi people get back on their feet, it became more and more obvious that what we were dealing with was far less about issues that arose from the Shock and Awe campaign a few months prior. What we were dealing with more than anything was decades of single-party rule from one central government under Saddam Hussein and his Ba'ath Party. It was everywhere I looked, y'all. Baghdad had rolling blackouts, which made the 5 million inhabitants very unhappy, especially in the summer months. For years, Saddam had failed, maybe intentionally, to invest in infrastructure planning. He had simply just diverted all the power grid to Baghdad, made sure he had what he needed in his palaces. Rolling blackouts, they were a way of life before the war in places like Najaf and Mosul and others, but never in Baghdad. Traffic when we got there, wow, was an absolute nightmare. Epic traffic jams of screaming, honking, angry, overly hot Iraqis. But that was because Saddam used to pick who was allowed to have a car. Literally, allowed to have a car, based on loyalty to the Ba'ath Party. As such, there were hardly any gas stations. No one had a license. And once he was gone, though, cars began flooding into Baghdad for the first time. Drivers everywhere were suddenly getting cars. It was madness. It was chaos because there had never been any planning for it, because it used to be that if you had a car, it was because the central government said you could. There were whole communities in Iraq where schools and sewage treatment and running water and all the usual essential services were just in complete disrepair because those people were not Saddam's chosen ones. I remember right there in Baghdad, just off the main highway, near Baghdad University, was a slum called the Sheikh Omar District. And the majority of its thousands and thousands of jam-packed residents in that one slum were all Shia Muslims, but Saddam was a Sunni Muslim. And so the people in Sheikh Omar, they just had to live like a third world country right in the middle of the central capital. So why am I telling you all of that? Because here's the deal. The founding fathers of our great nation, they knew that if they left all governance, all lawmaking, all appropriations, all taxing authority, all essential services, all judicial decisions, all of it, if they left everything in the hands of just one branch of a centralized government far away in a nation's capital, that you and I would be living in something more like Saddam Hussein's Iraq than we are in these United States of America. You see, the founders, they knew. They forged the 10th Amendment on purpose. They knew. Every state has its own governance now to this day because of that 10th Amendment and their own sovereign right to make determinations as to what constitutes the best way to provide protections and health, well-being, legal standards by which their respective state can abide. It's why you see such a difference in California and Alabama. It's clear. State legislatures have spoken. State governors have signed and authorized certain things to take place. States also, by the way, have a sovereign duty to protect and defend the interests of their citizens against the encroachments from a faraway federal government. They do. It's real. We cannot have an unrestrained majority that focuses all of its power into one place to the detriment of everybody else in the outlying areas. Every time you hear that a state attorney general is taking legal action against the federal government, just know this. Whether you like it or not, that action is predicated upon the fact that we have a 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that gives our state attorney general the right to do so. You see, the founders, they knew what they were doing. They had lived through it. They knew that devolving power outside the central government was key. A republic. Federalism. Benjamin Franklin is quoted as having answered the question that was posed to him by a lady standing outside the Colonial Convention when the decision was finally reached about what kind of government we would have. And she asked him, "Well, doctor, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" To which he responded, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." A republic, grounded in federalism and preserved in part by the 10th Amendment. Y'all, states are the firewall of protection against an overly aggressive and oppressive central government. It's how we provide checks and balances. It's what keeps the order and allows for the states to have an actual say in the welfare of their own citizens. A republic, if you can keep it. That's my philosophy.